Melchizedek commissioned his teachers to preach that God is trustworthy, that God is a covenant-keeping deity. And instead, they got all mixed up with social reform. They decided that temple prostitution was a reprehensible practice, and so they went out on a big mass crusade to clean up the temples, and as a result, the whole Melchizedek teaching got plowed under. Now, maybe temple prostitution is reprehensible, but Melchizedek had not told them to go out in the world and clean up prostitution. He said, teach about God. Jesus never commissioned Abner to inveigh against polygamy or to set up stringent moral codes. Abner did all of this, and the Mohammedan religion is a monument to Abner's faith. These people were not willing to buy. No, that's, well,
some of it is.
I'll tell you what is not in the Urantia book. This to me is very significant. You will find almost nothing of Jesus' teaching to Abner and the 12 apostles of John the Baptist.
That's true. I know that.
You'll find that he visited them. He did this, he did that. You will find nothing in particular of Jesus' caravan trip to the east. You're merely told that a lot of people benefited and so forth. They'll give you his talks at Hermia. But they don't tell you what happened in the detail.
Later, he's never recognized as a traveler in the east, by the way.
This is a tragic failure. A tragic failure. And the Blue Book just isn't interested in exploring failure. In principle, they simply say Abner was too rigid and uncompromised. Example. Abner sends teachers to Hermia, where Jesus had no trouble teaching. And these Christians were so stiff-necked that they disrupted Hermia. They were so uncompromised.
Well, just like some of our Christian others.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think the great failure in the East was there were no teachers of Jesus' message in the Kushan domains when a new religion was born, a new evolution of Buddhism, and a far superior religion to Buddhism. This is the type of Buddhism which I heard Kagawa, the Japanese Christian, describe. I went down to Methodist Temple in Chicago to hear him. When he said, if you send people over to Japan who do not have the spirit of Christ in them, he says, you're wasting your time because the Buddhists have got everything we've got except the spirit of Christ. They've got an excellent God concept. They've got a concept of a benign, a merciful, a beneficent God who will listen to your prayers, who will answer them. They've got everything except Christ in advanced Buddhism.
It's a much better concept of God than some of our Christian churches.
It's much more tolerant. Yeah. The tolerance of Buddhism appeals to me very much.
Wouldn't Moses make a fine secretary for you?
Lord, yes. Well, I agree with the Blue Book. They call him the matchless Moses. And they say he was the most important human being to live on earth between the times of Melchizedek and the times of Christ. He was the most successful religious teacher, I think, that the world has produced. Well, he built something, and it's still here.
What kind of animal has to get some books? Is it a kind of an animal? You have to do a study on Moses.
There isn't much known about Moses. Other than the story in the Blue Book is about as good as any. There's just not much known.
I don't have a...
There is very much only thinking.
Oh, yeah, there's lots in here, but I never had the feeling of warmth for him as I had right this morning.
I'll tell you what you do.
How smart he was.
Get the Dawn of Conscience and see what Preston says. That's the Dawn of Conscience. You will be very thrilled because this will open up an aspect of history which most of us don't know anything about. It's Preston's distillate of Egyptian writing in terms of the best of their moral and spiritual teaching. His frontispiece quote is, established as the man whose way is... Established as the man whose... weigh his righteousness and who walketh according to its precepts. This is from a quotation from the Grand Vizier Tahotep, about 3000 B.C.
I am constantly amazed. That's what we're finding out, through hearing you and doing the book and things that I'm reading outside. Of course, I'd be more alert all the time to find anything than just ordinary reading matter. But I'm constantly amazed at the past, at the concept of religion.
The Chinese had many things, too.
Yes, and the Indians.
Yes. The Hindus.
Well, Emma, you're getting barely dry behind the ears, and 1,000 years from now...
I don't think I'm dry yet.
1,000 years from now...
Well, they're still...
Look 1,000 years back.
They're still finding out things, too. I'm finding out things as I keep studying.
Because I know you know this. Your father told us the other day that in this research that he's doing now, with the Old Testament type, he had come across where... And he told us, but I don't remember whether it was his work, that he had come across a statement that Christianity is the story of Jesus instead of the story about him. The story about Jesus, that is, that he found it.
Was the sheer, it was the sheer majesty of his teaching, the purity of his teaching, that got through him well, in spite of all the things about the church and religion that Wells rebelled. It was the truth of Jesus that hit Wells, I
think. He didn't rebel against Jesus.
No, just on what we've done with him.
Just on what? Just on everything?
Based on our Bible.
Subsequent to him, just about.
And
I will remember this. In analyzing what the priests did to the Old Testament, let's be fair. Here were the leaders of a defeated people. They had all the normal feelings of patriotism, which all people have. Here were some writings, the Book of the Doings of the Kings of Judah, the Book of the Doings of the Kings of Israel. These are mentioned in the Blue Book, their source material. They decided to put together a textbook which would resurrect the feeling of Jewish patriotism and enable them to reconstitute a nation. They didn't realize they were writing a book that we were going to call sacred, any more than Paul is to be held responsible for the use that we put his, to which we put his private correspondence. And I think Paul wrote Hebrews, and I think that the difference between Hebrews and the other things is Paul writing for public consumption and Paul writing a letter. My Lord, I'd hate to have my letters published. Now, let's draw a parallel. There's a tradition in this country about Minutemen. It's one of the reasons we usually start a war with our completely unprepared. Our historians carefully eliminate George Washington's scathing comments about the Minutemen. Washington had absolutely no use for Minutemen. In essence, he says, they're here 1 minute and they're gone the next minute when you need them. Washington wanted disciplined troops. How many of you remember the name Rochambeau? This was a French major general who commanded a division of French regulars that were very helpful. George Washington. You know about Pulaski. You know about von Steuben. You know about Lafayette, but you don't know about Rochambeau. He commanded the French troops. How many of you have heard the name de Grasse? All right, let me ask you a question. The last engagement of the Revolutionary War was at Yorktown, wasn't it? Where Washington hemmed in Cornwallis and starved him out to the point where he had to surrender. Yorktown is a seaport. How could George Washington starve out Cornwallis when the British commanded the seas and could have supplied Cornwallis? The answer is the British had temporarily lost command of the seas to a French admiral by the name of De Grasse, who commanded the French fleet operating off the Atlantic coast of North America. About 6 years later, Nelson, then a rear admiral, caught De Grasse down in the Caribbean and gave him what Paddy gave the drum. But in the meantime, we had achieved our independence. Why did England make peace with the United States? She wasn't broke. I mean, she proved it later. Look how long she took on Napoleon. Why did she give up? There was another French admiral. I forget his name. The French had just recently lost to the English in India. They lost to the English in India at the same time that they lost to the English in Canada. This was part of the same war. This French admiral was operating off the Coromandel coast of India. He weighed about 300 pounds, and he was a fighting fool. And he had a ragtag squadron of French ships that he could barely keep afloat because they'd been in so many engagements. But every time he'd catch an Englishman, he'd sink her. And he was completely disrupting British trade with India. And so they met at number 10 Downing Street, and they said, something has to be done. If we continue war on two fronts with France, we've got to raise the tax rate to another shilling in the pound. If we raise the tax rate, we're going to lose the next general election. Our party will go out of power. We can maintain war on either front without raising the tax rate. So it's obvious the place to make peace is with these 13 colonies because they've never made any money for us. These are the people who won't even pay taxes to defend the French and Indian frontier. They want all that tax money to be paid by Englishmen. The Pennsylvanians, the New Yorkers, are not even willing to tax themselves to maintain their own militia. England had 13 feisty De Valeras to contend with. No wonder she made peace, because she wanted to quit the French in India, because that's where all the money was coming from, India. Now, there's one French major general and two French admirals that are not mentioned in our history books because it sounds better if we whipped England. But it just doesn't happen to be a fact.
That's real good.
Now, you talk about brainwashing. Our history books are no more distorted than the Old Testament is distorted.
You mean the Old Testament is no more distorted than our history books?
Yes, yes. You see, we live our myths.
And now Russia is distorting the history books.
That's right.
Okay.
Wilma, I have a real passion to know what's real. I want to get through the legends into reality. It doesn't disturb me in the least that we were deeply indebted to the French for our independence. Not in the least. I think we did a pretty good job anyway. But I think if more Americans knew this, they'd have more facts to go on. Just as if more Jews knew their history, they would be less tempted to think of themselves as Aryan folk, which is one of the traps that a Jew falls into. And it says so in our Bible. Our Bible says he's chosen people. He doesn't have to quote his Bible, he can quote the Christian Bible. No, Rochambeau, De Grasse, and I wish I could remember the fat admiral's name.
The fat admiral was on the Indian coast.
He just was barely keeping his ship afloat.
Well, we might have had a little bit of a different history if they said, well, we just fight one, so let's drop
it. If they'd have made peace with France, they could have really come in. England wasn't worn out. Not in the least.
The French weren't ready to make peace. They were smarting from the...
That's right. So you're only from 1765 to about 1780. It's only 15 years since the French lost Quebec.
Reiterate for us again the Hohenzollern concept in the history book of 1910 and the concept in 1920.
Where I got started on this was when I was a freshman in high school. My folks gave me a very decent allowance to buy school books with. But I early discovered that if you bought real beat-up books, you could get them cheap, and then you had money left over to buy more books. So I used to buy the most beat-up textbooks I could find. And this would be 1920, more or less. And I got me a medieval modern history of Europe by Meyer, I believe it was. Date, 1902, was the oldest, cheapest text I could find. And I'm sitting in class, and we're dealing with the rise of Prussia. And in my book it says, from earliest times, the Hohenzollerns had recognized that Prussia had no natural frontiers, and therefore had wisely provided for the maintenance of an efficient standing army for national defense. That's what it says in my book. Our current textbook was written right after World War I. And every other text in the class that the class read said, from earliest times, the Hohenzollerns had maintained an evil passion for arms and armaments. And this is where I lost all faith in printed material.
That's where your eyes were.
This opened my eyes. And it was just about that time I read a book from the library of a classmate of mine. Lenny's father was an Anglican minister who became a Unitarian. He moved to this country in many earlier years with his books, including Len's childhood book. And some of you may have read books written by Arthur Guy Henty, who was quite a writer of youthful adventure stories. And this is one that Henty wrote for English consumption, not for this country. It was called True to the Old Flag. And it was a story of some British loyalists in the days of the American Revolution. And it was then I realized that the only difference between George Washington and Jefferson Davis was who won the last battle. No, our history has been rewritten. And I say these things not to debunk American tradition, but merely to point out that the Americans are no different from the Jewish priests in the days of Babylon. We haven't put fiction in, but we have left out many facts, important facts.
Which makes it hard to tell crude reality.
That's right.
Well, no one's building until there, right?
I'm so grateful for that 1902 textbook.
I mean, I think that's a gem.
It is.
I think that is a gem.
I have that book.
Myers, yeah. I think it was Myers, that was his word.
I think it was too. I don't know what.
But they're two diametrically opposed statements, depending on when the book was written.
Well, how did you teach you to get out of that? Because I'm sure you're aggressive enough that you marched up and said,
I just quit talking about it after a little while. That's how the teacher got out of it. But then I started looking.
You confirmed it was 1902
version. Oh, sure. I got up and read it in class. I think they gave me some, you know, whitewash like, well, we approved this for you to go along with it.
It is
directed
to be two facts later on.
This is right. We have facts and we have true facts. Now, this is what Jesus ran into, was the ideological set of the Jewish people for nationalism. And this is why they didn't accept him. They were told that they had a manifest destiny to be an independent nation. And recent history tended to support them, because that was Roman foreign policy. So once Rome got on top, Rome didn't want to divide and rule. Rome just wanted to rule. And she had the power to make your authority felt. he's getting a little bit outsized for that time. But if you consider the life of Jesus from his birth to about his mid-20s, this is an awfully fine life, a thoroughly worthwhile life, and yet not an extraordinary life. But you see the way he reacted to things. He didn't try to reform Nazareth and say, we got to open up, got to make the synagogues coeducational. No, he quietly set up a home school. Taught to it that his sisters were literate. He learned discretion. Got into one jam and had to be bailed out. You remember the time they wanted him to head up the zealot movement? Well, he had friends. And people like that will always have friends. Whether it's the old Kazan and his younger brother James, or whether it's young Jakey, the stonemason's son. There's a real life, and it's an understandable life. It's a simple life. It's a good life, and very unstuffy.
And back to the edifice talked about a while ago.
Yeah.
The swing gone and all the
yeah.
bricks and then
all we get left is a bomb shelter.
Wouldn't it be possible, or is it at all possible, to come back and make a club room out of the east wing instead of a terrific structure sticking off like the west side of
Country
Club?
I don't think it takes the whole edifice to make it. I think with a well-decorated basement, it can be done. I'm minded of the statement in Genesis, which is reproduced in the Blue Book. It says, and Abraham believed faintly. It does not say that the cosmic bookkeeper sneered at the smallness of the entry. No, it says, and it was counted unto him for righteousness. You see, if they operated this universe on the basis of justice, I would give up my religion and be a Stoic. I would simply say, I now abandon all hope, and I will continue to live a moral life simply because I choose to live this way. But they tell me they don't run the show this way. They tell me it's a family, and it's actuated by love. And that there's an element called mercy. And so I continue to have hope.
And here's your faith in the back of the book. To the kingdom of God. I said it over before I start the book out there, and I can't say it. Better than that, I said it. You quoted the kingdom of God in something. The love of God and brother to the man. I had a list of home at all the places that it appears in the book. Did Bert find what she's looking for too?
No. No, I think you can make it with a well-decorated basement. As long as you leave the adjuster anything to work with.
You cannot destroy it.
You can't destroy it all. But I don't think it requires the divine plan to get there. And I just compare the life of the earlier life of Jesus with any comparable human life that you might want to think of. And that's a fair comparison. Jesus a man versus any man. You better cut it off at about 25, though.
Father got a temper to low, even quicker than that.
Yeah.
The fatherhood of God.
Yeah.
The brotherhood of God.
No, I think we can get there with even a part of a basement. If we've got the best-looking coal bin, this might make it. I don't think it takes a great deal. If there's something there that the adjuster's been a party to, which means that God has been a party to. If there's nothing, then there is nothing.
Well,
I think so. Procrastination. Problem avoidance. Unfairness. Heat seeking. Equivocation. They tell, I'm merely quoting the papers, where they tell us that the mansion worlds are principally occupied, the earlier ones, with the eradication of such animal vestigial traits as equivocation, procrastination, problem avoidance, unfairness, and ease seeking. These they seem to regard as the cardinal weaknesses or sins of mankind.
I was hoping you'd make something
Ellen's
guilty of.
It's, aren't they devastating them all? If they'd only stick to lurid things like adultery and, you know, things like that. It's not in the mansion world part two. That's worth finding, I think. I'll bet I don't find it.
You've got 2.5 minutes to find it.
Is that when we're
going
to quit?
But I haven't had to leave. I want to stay with it.
That's 3 days. If you don't find it, we'll have it for you next week tonight.
I wonder if we can. Let's look.
Page 551.
That's in the miracle life? I wouldn't have gotten to it for a while.
Yeah, that's 1 2 3.
Class 51. What paragraph? Yeah, paragraph 3. One of the purposes of the Maharanshi career is to effect a permanent eradication from the mortal survivors of such animal vestigial traits as procrastination, equivocation, insincerity, problem avoidance, unfairness, and ease seeking. The Mansonia life early teaches the young Maharanshi pupils that postponement is in no sense avoidance. After the life in the flesh, time is no longer available as a technique of dodging situations or of circumventing disagreeable obligations. You can't count on death to bail you out anymore.
Bill, those things listed there, to me, do not affect the house we talk about long ago.
Well,
those are not the things, because they admit that on the first mansion world we can have all these things.
Oh, sure.
There are other things, the more important.
Well, they tell us that the keys of the kingdom of heaven are
sincerity.
And more of the same. And that we make progress therein by decisions and by more of same. Which to me, I would translate those as saying honesty and courage. If you have honesty and courage, you will grow. Because even if you start in the wrong direction, you'll learn. If you don't have any courage, you don't start. And if you're not honest, you won't learn. It takes the two.
And it takes the first of the two.
Yeah.
It takes service to mankind, the love of mankind, to build a house.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Who's being dishonest? In other words, some people thinking of honesty might not be honest. So it's
pretty honest. Yes, I think you must be.
Principles above that are personality.
Well, let's go back and use that word, sincerity. If a human.
Something sincerely wrong, Bill.
Sir?
I can do something wrong and be sincere.
Oh, certainly you can. You'll learn if you're sincere, but if you're not sincere, you'll rationalize it. Yeah. I think you've got to have the two to get anywhere. If you don't make decisions, if you don't have any courage, you stand still. So how do you learn? And if you start in the wrong direction and you're insincere, dishonest, you'll refuse to learn. But if you're sincere and then move, then even if you're totally wrong to start with, you will learn. And eventually you'll write your course.
Bill, I get the idea. I might be completely wrong, but George Stevens there, you know, tore down that house in the basement. And he did well with the basement. He was wanting him to go back up, and Carney was sort of just to build it clever in my face.
If you live long enough, but maybe death will prevent the...
I'm going to live forever, buddy.
Well, I agree with you, but not here. Not here. You'll rebuild it on the mansion.
I'll live here long enough to have a trip. I have a plane ticket on that first trip to the moon, commercially. Excuse me.
We're fine.
I hate like the devil to have to say this. Goodbye.
I'll see you soon.
Mine's right. I hope to see you next time you get around.
Well, to see. I'll be here next month.
18th
of
September.
Oh, really?
Take care. 16th.
No,
Helen.
Oh, really?
Remember the day.
Well, you're going.
I don't have to shut up.
We'll get on to my room.
George, nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Awfully happy to see you.
Well, thank you.
Bill, you've no idea.
Cheers.
That's all I'm going to say. You have no idea.
We've covered a lot of territory this afternoon.
George is going to be a doctor. While searching for all this evidence, which I think I was successful, I ran off to the top of page 1217.
Mind is all you have that's under your control.
The only thing. It is the only thing.
Mind is our tool.
Mind is the cosmic instrument.
Yep.
And that is.
You can destroy and warp mind. You can make mind ugly and evil. You can be defensive with mind. You can refuse to learn with mind. Or you can say in your heart of hearts, mea culpa. You don't have to proclaim it to the world. And you can say, all right, teach me. But if you don't admit you're wrong, you deny yourself the capacity to learn what's right. And yet, this doesn't mean that you deflate your ego and make of it a carpet on which people walk. That's not necessary either. That's not God's will. I think God wants in man a healthy ego, but not an overblown ego. Jesus would do anything to restore self-respect to a man who lacked it or to restrain it in a man who had it. Ego is like air pressure in your tires. Lord, if they're flat, let's pump them up. But let's not overinflate them. You can run into a blowout, see? And there's a nice balance. It's like walking a tightrope. I've chuckled many times where the Blue Book says we can't appraise ourselves. And I've thought about Willie. And if I look at the asset side of my balance sheet, I can be pretty proud.
Oh, you can rationalize.
But see, if I look at the liability side, I wonder if I have any right to take up elbow room here on Earth. You know what I mean? Men all too often forget that God is the greatest experience in human existence. Other experiences are limited in their nature and content. But the experience of God has no limits, save those of the creature's comprehension capacity. And this very experience is in itself capacity enlarging. When men search for God, they are searching for everything. When they find God, they have found everything. The search for God is the unstinted bestowal of love. attended by amazing discoveries of new and greater love to be bestowed. That says it pretty well. 1289, paragraph 3.
All true love is from God, and man receives the divine affection as he himself bestows this love upon his fellows. It is something that we cannot teach.
Let's read the next paragraph. All true love is from God, and man receives the divine affection as he himself bestows this love upon his fellows. Love is dynamic. It can never be captured. It is alive, free, thrilling, and always moving. Man can never take the love of the Father and imprison it within his heart. The Father's love can become real to mortal man only by passing through that man's personality as he in turn bestows this love upon his fellows. The great circuit of love is from the Father through sons to brothers and hence to the Supreme. The love of the Father appears in the mortal personality by the ministry of the indwelling adjuster. Such a God-knowing son reveals this love to his universe brethren, and this fraternal affection is the essence of the love of the Supreme. I probably am. Yes, Burke, what is it I'm going to do? Reveal it unto me.
I just wondered if tonight you were going to page forward again.
Yeah. I would very much like tonight to wrestle like Jakey with the angel. You never make first downs, but it's fun to carry the ball. That's a mixed metaphor. Now, any part of the forward you want to talk about? I mean, tonight we'll split hairs. I thought this afternoon with some freshmen in the group it was much better to take an overview of the forward. But tonight we get right down to cases if you want to do that.
Well, many may like details, you know, so...
Tonight, Minnie Mae will unscrew the inscrutable.
I mean, to tell Clyde that I didn't give enough details when she did here.
I have been criticized for my attitude at that meeting. No end, and I appreciate all of it.
Well, she did such a fine job, but she just didn't get into detail enough.
Wow, here's a man and can divide, get more divided.
Before we go to dinner and before he gets started on these details, do you have anything that you want to ask Bill about? Since this is your first meeting with him?
We only have about an hour until dinner.
We're going to quit at 5:30.
We're going to quit about 5:30.
What time do you say?
Well, I've been out voted before, 5:30.
All right, let's quit at 5:30. When do we meet again?
7:30. No.
7:30?
I've out voted twice.
Pardon me, I heard several answers.
When
are
we
going to
quit?
Well,
we're going to
quit
at
5:30. We should start at 7:00.
When are we going to quit at
9:00.
Yeah. Well, quit at 9:00.
I'm not going to get out and vote on this. First, everybody wants, and then I'm going to vote.
You want to quit at 9?
What time? When do you want to quit, Bill?
Well, we quit formally at 9, and we sometimes sat around here just talking until 11 o'clock.
Yeah.